going to invite Greta, Mark, and Tim to come back. And
so I might just ask one question of all three of you, and we can start with that, and then we'll go to some audience questions, and if there's any hesitation out there, be aware that I will take your time to ask questions because I've written down a lot. So please jump in. I think the question for me, or one of the things for me that comes up a lot and that I was thinking about a lot through all three of these talks that wasn't perhaps specifically articulated was this idea of the technological elite. And it came up with the proprietary systems, and it comes up with the sort of developers and the way that they are becoming such a kind of resource in demand. And also I think it was relevant to your talk as well. And what I might ask you, I'm not sure if I've really articulated this for myself, but is something about maybe what you see as the danger of that being, or just if you can talk about what that means. Because for me, it kind of, and I'm not an expert in history, but it kind of reminds me, I have this feeling that we're kind of entering a different kind of medieval relation to literacy in a certain way. So there's this technological literacy that is just sort of missing, and I think that a lot of the large corporations really have a huge amount of vested interest in making technology seem so simple and intuitive that there's no reason to understand what it actually does, and there's no reason to kind of look behind the curtain. And I wonder if maybe you could talk a little bit about the power dynamic that kind of grows out of that. And because I think that, to me, that was really the heart of this session so far. Was like, that is what we are up against, that is what we need to fight against, and maybe we can just sort of...
Okay. For me, it's not a difficult question, because I think it's one of the reasons why I was really trying to emphasise about connections with permaculture.
Yeah.
Is that... I think ownership isn't a singular act. It can be an individual and collective act on different things. And I think what, as a third pillar, as a group, is beginning to realise, and we realised earlier on, is if you approach life tactically and try to create a kind of a mutual legacy amongst people that you're kind of finding affiliations with, whether it's to do with kind of nature, technology, or relationships, or I think you've still got the core needs there, and I think that there's a kind of, and maybe the different words, different people, and I think the issue is whether, and that's why I was trying to emphasise on proprietary context, because I think what once you don't have ownership over your own relationship with things, once that ownership's taken away, choice is taken away, it becomes much more limited, and you don't it separates you with taking responsibilities, and I think if you kind of like, say, with blockchain technology, and even with nature, we're very far removed from nature as well. You go to a farm and they can tell you all about nature just as much as you can about blockchain, which I think is just as equally relevant. And I think it's much more people taking... I think what it's doing, the idea of decentralisation and breaking down stuff, is very much about where you can deconstruct that kind of... construct that we've been led to believe that we're not allowed to be part of, and I think a lot of business hype around blockchain touches upon stuff where all they're doing really is just taking new ownership on top of other ownerships, and it has nothing to do with people. And I think that the thing that really needs to kind of be involved here is where people together take control, whatever age, wherever they're coming from, and start taking responsibility for the technology that's changed our lives. And I think that's kind of where we're coming from, and not allowing professionals to take us up the wrong paths all the time. And because you get so many people kind of not really making correct decisions on things that influence our lives, therefore you have Brexit. And, you know, because and it's all based on resentment and rather than on fact. And
yeah,
so...
I think the key thing for me there as well, Mark, is that, you know, I think you've already stepped far beyond the curtain, right? And so you are looking at these things and saying, we've been told that we aren't allowed to have ownership of this. Whereas I think that a lot of people who are still on the other side of the curtain are kind of looking at it and they feel that they're being told that they do own it. So the kind of rhetoric that a lot of these social media platforms and things like that use is that it is, you know, they co-opt the language of the commons to a certain extent as a kind of strategy for obfuscation of what's really going on there. And I think, you know, that's just what I wanted to kind of...
And I've got one more example. When we was in Bristol, and normally radio stations and television stations was very much about, you know, you'll be communicated to from up above. But when we created our own radio station, everyone came out of the woodworks. They didn't want, like, revolution, or they weren't violent people, but there's this weird thing that people fear, this kind of freedom where they can collaborate and make things on their own terms mutually. And I just think it's just like craft and lots of stuff, pirate radio... was very good in the 90s, where you got people actually, you know, mutually telling poetry to a public that was sharing it, and it was a very large thing. And I just think that ownership, not being scared, and the curtain, I think, can mean different things to different people. I think everyone in this room, I think, has had the experience when they've stepped beyond the curtain at times, and they can remember what that looks like for themselves, and I think that's what I'm calling for.
I suppose what I hear in connecting up the two things that you're saying is that your experience of pirate radio, the kind of the pleasure of making your own culture, is what is now being offered back to us through YouTube and Facebook, that this is what we're being told we're doing, except that there is this whole other layer... this whole other layer which happens behind the curtain that we are told that we don't really need to worry about and we don't really need to think about, and yet it's having in the way these platforms are constructed in order to harvest us for the things that make those things profitable. We're being manipulated in small ways to change our behaviour and to change our relationship with each other.
I think it's worth talking about the fabric of the curtain itself, which used to be a kind of official wall between official knowledge and common knowledge. And now the fabric of that curtain is increasingly what's been called agnotology, which connects with the obfuscation that you observed before, that actually it's the fact that official narratives now create such confusion in people's minds that the access to that information, which actually in many cases is freely shared, is just obscured behind a wall of bullshit. You know, so actually it's a curtain that's made of pure bullshit that separates us from the control of our environment. I think that the case of Salvatore Iaconessi is a very good one, because what you have there is a commons that's created of people who hold significant technological knowledge, who, you know, bodily systems and these kinds of things, that are able to use a distributed system to effect very particular targeted change, but also to effect larger change in and around that. So the sorts of networks that we use are fundamentally empowering if we can penetrate that curtain of agnotology that hangs between. And there's lots of places where there's great potential. So one of the things that's most threatening to contemporary landscapes is just the way that contemporary development processes are constructed. You know, international money that comes in and changes places locally with, you know, in ways that are heedless to local communities and local places, whether that be countryside or cities. And the fact that we have techniques which may be more or less perfect, like crowdsourcing, crowd sharing, building information modeling, which allows a single set of architectural drawings to be worked on all at the same time by different people within the team. All of those put forth the possibility that technology is available on everyone's computers and can be used by everyone simultaneously, and it's only the curtain of bullshit that keeps us from taking control of that.
Although I do think it's important to reiterate what Aaron was asking about before and talking about before, which is about accessibility and diversity. So when we talk about everyone's computers, we have to think about who that everyone is and whether their access to those computers is the same. And I think Ruth mentioned that as well about diversity.
I think that this, so one of the reasons we're so excited to have Greta, Helen and Haroon is that I think we're going to see then some really clear working examples of how this is being pulled and stretched and critiqued in practice, in kind of working practice.
So some of it is about facilitating.
Yeah.
The, you know, so those of us who do understand certain types of technology are helping to bring it to more diverse communities and to more diverse places. So it's actually us understanding that we're all for one and one for all with this technology, not trying to fence it off and make it our own. So.
And the other thing I think is very important, which you mentioned colonialism. And one of the, I remember when one of my friends who didn't know how to use a computer, and he was like scared of it, and I was taught myself how to do all kinds of stuff with it, and I could really see that shift between him, like in the early 90s when I got him a computer, and he learned how, and I showed him how to use it. And then he got a job in as a techie later on, but that shift where you have to ask that difficult question of whether it's right to become part of that technology and whether that technology is colonizing you. And I think, say, the blockchain and various aspects. But I think you should view that across the board, you know, whether that art culture is dominating you, you know, whether that is, whether certain groups within art culture are really appropriate, you know, ambassadors within that context, and whether they need to be kind of critiqued accordingly, like we are critiquing new technologies taking over our lives.
So at this point, I think maybe we can open up and see if there's any other questions. Otherwise, while people are still processing and thinking of how to phrase their questions, I could ask a question. Does anybody have something?
Metaphor you used, indicating that artists and art were highlighted in a situation of social deterioration and problems, and the metaphor was canaries.
Yeah.
In view of the fact that canaries mostly died, would you care to expand the metaphor?
All I have to say about that is that we shouldn't try to push our metaphors too hard.
Yeah, it's a rather unfortunate metaphor.
Is that as the canary, we need to come out and sing a completely new song, bearing in mind all these structures that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So,
like, why are we mining?
Yeah, exactly. Get me out of here. Why are we mining? Why are we mining? Yeah. And what are we mining for?
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are the questions I ask myself as a practicing canary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I have a question about ownership and sharing and about the terrible slowness of technology, because every time when a new, gulf of wave of new technology strikes us, we all start thinking of, well, this will rescue us. But then, I know the time when I was learning basic programming, and then I also left it because it didn't help me really forward as being an artist and wanted what I wanted to do. And the only thing I understand about this whole talk is that you can only share something if you own it. So the commons, they made their common ground, and they shared their common ground because they owned it. Bitcoins, I have seen those documentaries of huge halls where people are mining bitcoins and try to get as much of it in as less time. But then technology is terribly slow. Before I am so far in my backyard to mine bitcoins, you know, I probably die in between the lines as a canary. So why do we look every time in the future, in the distance, to the horizon? And why don't we get hold of the things we have around us now? Why are we so terrible, unhappy with the landscape, how it is at the moment? How are we? Why we need this change to the next wave? What is this? Can you give me an answer?
So I would just maybe speak to what Ruth was something Ruth was saying to me yesterday, which was about the fact that none of us really, because of this. I mean, I understand the use of the word slow, but I think it's for me, it's also the speed with which it happens. None of us have the capacity to fully educate ourselves about every single new change that we want to kind of work with or remedy or influence, which is why the idea of the commons, the way that Furtherfield uses it, is so important, because it's about identifying something and not necessarily being the lone genius who comes up with a solution for that or a hack around it yourself, but about being the nucleus that pulls the necessary ingredients, the necessary people towards that hub where that thing can be solved. And so for me, the commons is less about it's less about ownership per se, but it's constantly being formed and reformed around a particular question or topic.
Yeah, I just want to say, there's certain people that are exploring ownership in different ways, and I think it's a very valid question what you're saying, and I'm very partial towards that. And I mean, for me, the biggest issue is ownership of consciousness, you know, and how our consciousness is being mutated according to other agendas that aren't necessarily healthy for us, and technology can be one of those, and but as well as different forms of politics, but I think ownership, I think, is not a word that needs to be seen in terms of having in a way where you oneself has this and no one else can have it. It can, there's different forms of ownership. You can have like collective ownership, or you can have it on yourself. You can own that lollipop and eat it until it runs out, you know. But there's other forms of ownership beyond family. I think there's a massive question at the moment regarding around ownership of friendships, and ownership is about ownership of the context, ownership of the social context. That's the ownership where I come from, and when I say ownership, it's just, I mean that I'm not owned, you know, and so it's very much about, and I'm exploring those avenues of where I may be not who I am because of certain things are mutating my relationship with the world. Mm-hmm. And technology is definitely one of them, but there's loads of other things as well.
I'd like to talk about propriety for a moment, which I think is important. It's very closely related to property, but it's very clearly also a social term, social and cultural term. What is proper? And propriety, when we think of it as a as sort of personal quality, you know, is what you're doing proper in the eyes of the people around you? But propriety is also what is your own. You know, what it's the ownership you have of your public self, your intellectual self, that constitutes propriety. I think that's a really important narrative, because in competitive individualism, which characterizes neoliberalism, the narrative is all about the freedom of the individual. Propriety places us in a framework of culture and society that we can't extricate ourselves from. But it's not that it just runs roughshod over the individual. In that phrase, all for one and one for all, the one is still prominent. That the individual still exists and is actually bolstered by that collectivity within which it's a part. Okay, that's a very big philosophical narrative, but it does come into place every time we negotiate the commons, when we are developing something, whether it's an urban neighborhood or whether it's software. What are we doing it for? What are we developing for? What are we mining for? What is development? If you use a child, how do you develop a child? You help to socialize them, help them get along in the world around them, help to make them good citizens, help to make them capable of doing their own washing up, and you know, to be meaningful participants, which gives them freedom to make their way in the world as individuals. So if when we're developing the city or developing software, we're always thinking about what is proper to this process, what needs to be owned and how in this process, then that's a very, very crucial narrative, I think, to tie together all the work that we do of the commons. That wasn't too out there, was it?
It's very nice, thank you. Can I say something? When I first encountered the web, so I encountered the web as a sculptor, and under under the Saatchi era, when actually there was a kind of cultural enclosure happening for the production of a few celebrity art stars, and a real dampening down of what art might be and mean to more people. And I encountered the web at that point and discovered that I could make connections with artists, activists and techies who were driven, compelled like I was, to constantly try and reimagine what the role of art might be in the world in relation to social issues and what it was to be a human being in this world. People from around the world and people who wanted to make that context together, separate from the kind of Saatchi strand of art world. And I was really very utopian, because the web, I was inspired by the topology of the web, the thing that enabled me to root around the kind of gatekeeping systems, the connection node to node and peer to peer, and it, for a really long time, I'm still shaking it off, the idea that this was technology that saved me. My view now is that the reason we experience the problems with technology is because it's not complicated. Technology is the most favoured servant of capitalism. It's the kind of route to the fastest growth, and growth is what we're after. Yeah. Growth is what we're after, regardless of what it does to our social relations or the environment. And so to me, although we can be It can look like technology is the thing that is shaping stuff. It's actually about the values and the social systems behind it, I think.
Yeah, and something that's a word that's been echoing in my head through all of those responses was progress, you know, which is something that we are, I think, in the cities, in the West, in the North, we are absolutely wedded to, and there's almost never a kind of real critical look at why. And I think that is at the heart of that dilemma that you were articulating as well. And I think also, Ruth, that it explains why ultimately, you know, when you became utopian about technology and what it was for reasons that drill down rather than shoot out.
Yeah.
So it's about drilling down to what it is to be human and what our role is. And we, even though supposedly in German they call Europe the Abendländer, the evening lands, which is, I think, to do with sort of some idea about how old the culture is or how developed it is. And, you know, people from Australia are kind of considered to be very young culture and, you know, very immature sort of culture and this kind of thing. But actually, I think in that way, the culture of the Abendländer is very... it's very immature. It's still trying to figure out what its role is in the world and how we as individuals fit into a kind of culture and what our purpose is and that sort of thing. There are other cultures, which we'll talk about. Indigenous cultures was already raised, and I'll talk a bit more about that later. And that, you know, there are other cultures that really have already those answers for themselves, and, you know, we need to learn from those as well. So I think it is about also making sure that when we talk about being up to date with technology and the importance that artists and cultural producers get amongst it, I think Ruth's presentation was a really powerful call to action, really, for all of us. But it's not about trying to progress to somewhere. It's about almost understanding how to hold that in some way, or how it can help us to ground ourselves more as opposed to progress towards something, whatever that thing would be.
Can I come back to growth? Because I think growth is really important. I think growth is everything. And again, it's like development. We've got to frame the question right. What's growing? What are we mining? Growth, if you're a child, is
economic.
No, I know, but this is where I think, you know, actually talking directly to these concepts is really important. So, you know, a child grows both in size and in what they are able to accomplish. So growth should still be our core narrative, but we should be concentrating less on quantity and more on quality.
But,
you know, like, let's still make that our target. Let's still have growth as the target.
But also...
But have it be quality instead of quantity.
I think it's about narrative. We're used to having being told a narrative of who we are and why we're here and what we're doing. And there's certain moments in time, like fractures in culture, where the narrative is disrupted by particular groups of people. And some of it positive, some of it negative. The Twin Towers was a disruption of the narrative for kind of hyper-capitalism, a negative example, what everyone wants to know. But there's also another narrative that I find more positive, which was punk, when it came along. And it, for a whole group of people, younger people like myself, it told us a narrative that we could own together, that we had some form of control over that context, and whatever growth that was, that growth would be growth around production, and what that taught you, what that process was, what that experiences, what the meanings were. So people were discovering meanings on their own terms, and I connect that with kind of not literally, but I think Indigenous culture, now. We're coming to realise that they do still own their own narratives. And I think one of the problems we've got in the Western world is that we've got so many narratives that we can pick and choose from, is that we don't know what way to turn. And the idea of the commons, I think, is a good place to start. where you can kind of have that conversation, whether it's through technology or...
And it's a very current conversation because it was reignited by the digital world. We wouldn't be talking about the Commons now if it wasn't for what had happened digitally. But it's unearthed all these ways of practicing all these older narratives that are problematic but useful and empowering. So I think that we can hang an awful lot around the idea of the Commons, certainly.
I'm just trying to think about how to kind of frame the question, but you talk about, say, for example, the sort of curtain, but maybe I'm thinking that a lot of the time with many problems, it becomes more about actually the surface not representing a deeper truth about the problems of production and so on behind it. And so, say, for example, at the moment, a lot of problems within capitalism is sort of like this desire led by an image of, so whether, I think Mark, you might have mentioned symbols and so on and so forth.
Been the Cadillacs.
Yeah, and actually, and then the subject of unions come up as well, and I'm working with Artists Union England, which just got a certification process came through a couple of months ago. And again, it's kind of this idea now that the idea of unions sort of becomes this quite almost like quite an old-fashioned kind of type of thing. And then what's this other version of these very slick technologies coming through that actually maybe don't have the, whether it's like this commons purpose or something that's kind of very well done, whereas something like unions actually really do work for people in a certain way. Did that come out?
No, that came out clear.
Terribly.
Came out as a very clear statement. Is there a question?
No. Well, yes. Basically, what I'm trying to sort of find is like, well, how do artists, considering we work with surface and also systems a lot of the time, it's like, well, how could that knowledge of surface and aesthetic be kind of used to make what is important actually something which has maybe the same kind of like sort of validation or something like this?
Isn't it about collaboration? Because, I mean, it's when you're talking about surface and that we make surface, I know what you mean, because the way that we communicate is often through an aesthetic, some sort of aesthetic. But I, like, something in me wanted to jump up and down and scream that I don't make surface. And I think that part of that is because of the collaboration. So yeah. To get to the same result, you can do it in a way that is riding roughshod over a whole lot of people, and there are a lot of artists who do that and who participate in these forces that we want to work against. But there are also ways to do that are collaborative in a really true sense. And I think that, for me, all of that, it has to be based on an intersectional feminist approach to these things, which brings in, you know, race and class and geography and language, you know, and all of these different things. And I think once we kind of... So, yeah, we've been talking about this as well, and the way that, you know... Even before you have a discussion about if we want to move away from neoliberalism and capitalism, what should the replacement be? And I think that maybe even before we get to that, we need to think about how it is that we relate to each other and what our communication style is and how that communication style can be improved. And those kinds of things, I think, are built through collaboration in some way. And those, it's like you say, it's a very practical kind of dirty work of just being together and like being in our bodies, you know, not just, and I like the fact that you related it to our sex lives as well, but it's like, it's not just our minds, you know, we're not just sitting
talking. Which aren't always quite a commons, I suppose. That's dangerous.
but we need to kind of, all of these things that we're talking about are situated in bodies. So we're all, you know, we are all bodies and we need to kind of relate to each other on this kind of, deeper, real kind of level before we can build to these other things.
I think the way to do that, I mean, and workshops with children is a classic way of understanding how you can build commonality through learning and comradeship or sharing, you know. And I just think, you know, we've kind of lost that art as adults in a way where we're less open to a particular kind of ways of enacting and actually when you're younger I think you're much more open to different forms of agency and you're seeing what that looks like. You haven't quite formed your gender yet or even agenda, and we've all defined our gender, we've all defined our agendas here, and I think maybe we need to reverse that, you know, we exist within templates, and if we can rewrite those templates, what would they look like? You know, kind of like, and the kids are doing that already for themselves, and they're going through that process. And I think that the whole kind of idea of having play and fun is that you take it makes you much more open to exploring deep questions in a way that kind of like you can have in a trivial way or in a much more complicated way, but you're still open to that. And I think once you're older, you get to a point when you think that you know your way, you know what's right and wrong, and you know that you're not interested or you are interested in it. It's so black and white that actually we've realised that the world is not absolute, or we know that already, but actually we don't act as though the world... You know, it's like we're still Newtonians when actually 100 years ago quantum physics was discovered. You know, we're caught within this kind of monocultural way of acting, but actually quantum physics dominates everything. And the internet is a perfect example that kind of communicated that as a function.
I think you make a really good point about, so we've been doing some work with teenagers recently, and that I think if you can work with young people or the young person within all adults to re-see, especially things like interfaces, so we're talking about surface, and actually looking at what surfaces are doing. So if we look at interfaces as surfaces that enable certain kinds of social relations, which is exactly what the social media platforms do. They're very carefully controlling the way we relate to each other. And actually, if you can create situations in which that kind of youthful irreverence and a kind of, no, I'm not having that, tear that apart, you can really start to kind of have, we can start to understand together the importance and the power of remaking our own context, I think.
The idea of surface too kind of reminds me of just how closely related art, design and advertising all are, and that the same techniques that you might use to create an infographic and a narrative film that helps to explain something really in depth and invite people to explore is the same technology that you can use to make sure that the viewer gets nothing but a glancing blow, that you appeal only to their prejudices and their knee-jerk responses, and that a graphic or a narrative can encourage you to slide right off of it just as much. So maybe the injunction there is just to be sure that as artists, as designers, that we employ the same kind of savvy that advertisers do to make sure that we're in full control of the narrative and that we create surfaces that are rough, that you can get traction on and that pull you in and that encourage asking questions and that give different platforms for asking further questions in different ways.
Surface and narrative are really interesting because it reminds me of Edward, who's heard of Edward Bernays? Anyone heard of Edward Bernays? He's a 40s
advertising
guru in America in the 40s. And one of the first mass feminist marches was taking place in New York, but they wanted to be put on television, seen on television, so their march can be kind of scene in the news. So he came up with this idea, because he was working for the government, that yes, I can get your mass march as feminists onto television, but you have to be smoking this brand of cigarette. And so you got this mass first...
You've come a long way, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, so you got this first kind of like positiveness of that these women were allowed to be seen as feminists on the news, but they were advertising Stuyvesant cigarettes.
Lucky Strike.
Adam Curtis, the documentary filmmaker, has a short series called Century of the Self, which talks about the relationship between Edward Bernays, Sigmund Freud, and then all of these kind of early neoliberal, neo-capital kind of...
Seeds
that were planted in that post-war soil. And I think that's very useful, because what it does is it exposes that particular narrative. And once, here we are back to narrative, you know, once you understand that as a trajectory, as a kind of designed process that had a particular set of surfaces and ways that they appealed to people and ways that they shut down questioning, I think then the counter narrative becomes much easier to construct, if you know what the original narrative was.
And we're going to wrap it up now so that we can have a little break and then come back a little bit refreshed afterwards. I guess one of the questions that I wrote down before, which maybe it's a nice thing to end on, considering that we've been talking about surface and narrative and then the impermanence of that and progress and all these different themes, is maybe to think about how we bring the land into the digital and how that can ground a lot of this in some way. And the way that the land also, you know, having Tim here was really great, talking about the land as a commons as well, the way that it relates to a commons. So maybe if I can be so bold as to make that a final, for this session, a final thought to kind of take into the break. And
that's if we agree to your absolute narrative.
Okay, so we'll be back at, let's call it 10 past, because we've run over a little bit. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.